Hello, this is Sheila Bender, and you're listening to In Conversation with Sheila Bender, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life. Today we're talking with writer Carolyn Corchi, who has quite a distinguished career in journalism as well as writing in a particular field, which comes from her life experience as journalist for such papers as the Oshkosh Daily Northwestern, the Wichita Eagle Beacon, and the Register Guard in Eugene, Oregon, where Carolyn now lives. She has come to book writing, and her two books are The Spirited Walker, Fitness Walking for Clarity, Balance, and Spiritual Connection, which chronicles a midlife transition from klutz to athlete and reveals a path of awareness and discovery born from a merger of mind and muscles. A breast cancer survivor, Carolyn has also written Healing Walks for Hard Times, Quiet Your Mind, Strengthen Your Body, and Get Your Life Back. She is an inspirational speaker as well as now continuing on in journalism. Welcome to the program, Carolyn.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Really looking forward to finding out more about your full circle career from journalism to book writing and back to journalism. So perhaps you can tell us a little bit about how your career began, why it began in journalism, and your progression through books and back.
My career in journalism began as a default move to get out of teaching high school English, actually.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I graduated from college and taught high school English for 3 years. That had been my plan, and discovered that I really didn't like teaching at all. But as it turns out, I think that it taught me so much about writing, because as I was teaching people and reading their students' writing, I had to learn how to explain why it wasn't working. I mean, I had taught myself a lot in those 3 years before I bailed out of high schools and went to the Oshkosh Daily Northwestern, where we were living in Oshkosh, my husband and I, that just for 1 year, begged a job and got hired as a proofreader in the back room in those days. This was 1968. Really, there was still hot press. And we had a proofreading. There were like three of us, sat there and read all the proofs from the paper that were set every day and corrected errors and the typos and things like that. I managed to convince I asked enough questions that I got moved out of the proofreading room and got to write weddings and things of that exciting nature for the next 6 months before we left Oshkosh. But it was enough introduction to the seduction of writing and of journalism that when we moved to Wichita, Kansas, where my husband was doing graduate studies, I talked my way into a job at the Wichita Eagle Beacon. There I advanced to writing obituaries, which was an incredibly important step, because I learned in that process that about the most important thing you needed to know as a journalist was to get people's names right. It's a fundamental fact that was very, very helpful. That evolved quickly into a more expanded position of writing features, writing news. I covered a whole span and worked in Wichita for papers, for the Wichita Eagle Beacon, which was a morning and evening paper, for 5 years. It was the most stimulating period of my writing life in terms of learning and feeling excited about a whole new way of experiencing the world. I don't know what else to say about that.
Well, that's actually quite a lot. How does one talk one's way into a job at a newspaper?
By the time I got to Wichita, I had a few clips and from the weddings I'd written in Oshkosh, but also just, I think, expressing curiosity, determination, and a certain preparation, which was that I did have a college degree. It wasn't in journalism. I think at this time, well, now papers don't have the same staff at all, but I was very fortunate that without a degree in journalism, I was able to get into journalism, but I did have a degree in English. I did have some skills. They were willing to give me a chance, and I'm most grateful.
It also sounds like you're a real learner and were willing to take on the obituaries and see what even writing those could teach you. And
absolutely.
That lesson has stayed with you for a lifetime,
yeah.
Which is, I think,
absolutely.
Those of us who write have to remember that there's opportunity everywhere, and we have to look for it and accept that we have to hone our craft with what's given to us to work on. So how did you move into book writing then?
Well, really the book writing came, by that time we had moved back to Oregon. My husband and I are both from Oregon, and we moved back to Oregon. I had gone to work at the Register Guard newspaper here in Eugene, where I worked for 12 years. During the time I was writing at that paper as a feature writer, and I spent 2 years as a features editor, but during that period, I wrote about a senior athletic event that was being held for athletes over the age of 35. You become senior in athletes after you're 35, which is a little depressing. But I was 45 at that time and wrote about this athletic event. And I got challenged by it. I actually believe now, as I look back on that experience, that I was getting a little stale in journalism, that maybe I had been in this particular position for 12 years and that it wasn't as challenging to me as it had been initially, and some part of me wanted a new challenge, and it turned out that was walking. So I became a competitive athlete as a race walker, a whole new experience for me. And that launched me into wanting to do something else with my life, feeling a need for a change, and I felt like it was time for me to leave the paper. At that point, I was 50, saying, at 50, either I'm going to stay here forever or I have to try something else. So I left the paper, and it actually took me 6 years of doing freelance writing and kind of shuffling around nervously before I said, oh, yes, I know what it is I'm going to do. I'm going to write a book about walking. I mean, it wasn't instantaneous. I didn't go out the door of the paper knowing I would write a book. I knew that I would write something. But it became clear to me now that through my walking that it was a time when there were being books about the inner game of skiing and the inner game of golf and the inner game of running. And I thought, someone's going to write the inner game of walking. It might as well be me.
Very good. So, yeah. So tell me something about journalism versus book writing. Are there skills that leap over and help you with a new genre? And are there some things that are difficult because of the training?
First of all, the books that I've written are nonfiction. They rely a great deal on the same skills of interviewing people, of getting the facts right, of telling stories. They rely on the same skills that that good journalists have and use. But the difference is enormous. I mean, I was kind of paralyzed when my first book, Spirited Walker, HarperCollins published that, and I got a contract that called for 60,000 words. I had no idea what 60,000 words meant.
Right.
And how big that was, or how I would even handle it. I mean, I was used to doing articles that might have been at 500 to 1,000 words. This was like way over the top. In fact, when I wrote for magazines, I did that quite a bit. There was often a 1,000-word limit. I could understand that. 60,000 words terrified me. So I actually had to kind of pretend like I was writing a series of newspaper articles. I had to pretend like there were extended magazine articles and newspaper articles in each chapter of The Spirited Walker, and I divided it down with an outline so that I could see the pieces and feel completion. I really, really didn't know how to operate without that kind of deadline. I'd spent 20 years working with deadline. I mean, a deadline that was tomorrow or
right,
next week
right.
at the latest.
Did you give yourself deadlines then for
I
each?
Did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you chose to agree with your deadline and meet it, even though
I mean, I probably didn't always, but I found it pretty helpful that I had that system.
Mm-hmm.
It was a way of overcoming the hurdle of the size of the project for me. Yeah.
And because
I made the final deadline, so that was okay.
Right. So I was going to ask you then, from the time you did decide to write this book and got the contract to the time you actually finished it, how long did that take you?
I bet from the beginning of the idea to the finished book was probably 2.5 to 3 years.
Mm.
Writing a book proposal is a huge project. That in itself, the preparation of a proposal, I think, probably took me 2 to 3 months. Just getting that ready and then submitting it and then getting an agent. I didn't have an agent, a literary agent before that. So that process was pretty lengthy. I do say I think it's really important because it forced me to clarify what it was I wanted to do. So I had to have that in the proposal.
Right.
I also got a lot of help from a consultant locally, Elizabeth Lyon, who has written a book on writing nonfiction book proposals.
Right.
And Elizabeth was a tremendous asset for me in creating the kind of proposal that actually got me attention right away. It was incredible.
Well, thank you for that reference. And then how long was it before you tackled another book, your second one, Healing Walks for Hard Times?
That book actually was about 6 more years in between those two books. I got very involved in promoting The Spirited Walker and doing lots of fitness walking kind of activities and workshops. And then 2 years after The Spirited Walker came out, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, which really changed my course. I mean, absolutely took me out of the presenting field as a speaker and teacher for a couple of years while I was in treatment and recovery and reassessing how I was going to do life. But as I emerged from cancer treatment, I realized how important walking had been to me during my treatment. I mean, in fact, what I understood was that The Spirited Walker had been kind of a guidebook for me about how to get through a process by keeping my feet on the ground, taking one step at a time, how to clear my head of worrisome thoughts by at least focusing on my breath or on my self-talk. It became my manual mm-hmm. for walking through a cancer experience. And I started teaching some of that at the local cancer center here as a volunteer, as a way of responding to my own cancer treatment. And as I taught, and that expanded, so I was teaching at cancer events elsewhere too, everybody wanted a program. I mean, they wanted to have more guidance. When you're in the midst of any major life upheaval event, it's so hard to even know where to start. So I saw that there was a need for a more prescriptive approach to walking. The Spirited Walker is exuberant. It's full of energy, and it's full of a zest for getting out there and getting fit. This needed to be a book about how to take the first step and how to move step by step through an 8-week program that says just keep moving, just keep telling your body that you're going to stay alive. I mean, that's where it came, out of the teaching that I did.
Uh-huh. And this time when you got a contract and it told you how many words, you were more comfortable?
Yes, I kind of knew what to expect. I still think doing the book was like a 2-year process, probably. And in both books, I was part of a writing group and have been off and on in my career, like where we met and read each other's work as a, and the group that I was in, everybody was a published author in some form, not all as books, but in magazines. So everybody there kind of knew about what was needed to make effective, clear writing. And that was really always helpful for me to have that feedback.
Right. And when you're a journalist, you get that feedback pretty quickly because you're writing, you have a quick deadline, your work gets out there. But when you're writing a longer project like a book, it's a whole different weight for the audience feedback. So having a writer's group and first readers is so assuring that we actually are doing something.
You know, and I, because I had my experience in newspapers, I really had learned to value a team, to be part of a team, to have somebody who had my back, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so the writers group became that. It became the team that I could brainstorm with, the team that would say, I don't think you want to say it like that. And you know, either of those.
You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 Port Townsend. In case you've just joined us, our program is In Conversation with Sheila Bender, discussions on writing and the writing life.
So now you're making a full circle back to writing for newspapers.
I am.
And so tell us a little bit about that.
Actually, it's really exciting for me to do this. I think there's something in my cycling system that I just need changes, that I need to do something different from time to time. Going back to the paper in Eugene seems very exciting right now because for the last 20 years, my work has really largely focused outside of the local community. I haven't had this kind of direct communication that a newspaper journalist has with the people I live with and socialize with. And there's a kind of accountability in that that I really value, that I really like. And it seems now exciting, a little risky, to re-enter that arena where I know that what I write in the paper, somebody will ask me about the next day at the gym.
Right.
Yeah.
So how did this opportunity come your way? And I do know from what you've told me that you're sharing this column with a couple of other writers as well.
The paper has initiated a new Sunday feature, which is a rotation of three columns, two of whom are columnists who've already been there for in previous years. One is Bob Welch, who's been a local writer. Then there's Dorcas Smuckers, who writes a column about her life as the wife of a Mennonite minister and mother of six children. She's a wonderful writer. She's been writing for the paper. And they're adding me to this mix, so we'll be in rotation. And my column that I'm adding is called Not the Retiring Type. And it's about this kind of coming out of retirement that I'm doing and that lots of people are doing at this time in our lives.
Right.
So it came about, actually, in a conversation with friends from the paper and friends from my life there 20 years ago, and my saying, I'm getting kind of restless. And they said, I think we could fix that.
So I know you're prepared to read a column, and I'd love to hear it.
Okay, this is actually the first proposed piece that I'll be running as a new columnist in the Register Guard, Not the Retiring Type. The symptoms showed up late last year, not long after my 71st birthday. A weariness settled in. It muffled my normally robust energy, leaving me bored and brittle. Day after day, I consulted the list I had thoughtfully prepared, outlining tasks I'd always planned to tackle when I retired. Sort through old photos. Clean up gardening supplies in the garage. Curl holiday decorations in the attic. List oak chair on Craigslist. Good legitimate goals, all of them. The kind of unfinished business that builds up during years of focus on family and work. I'd always thought somehow that as I matured, there would come a time when I would luxuriate in this process of sorting through history and lightening up. Instead, I felt impatient. I'd start a task and promptly lose interest. Almost anything could divert me. Before long, I'd look at boxes and not be sure which things I had meant to toss and which to save. Lest you suggest the obvious, let me clarify right now that throwing the whole lot out simply is not part of my genetic makeup. In this era of discomforts disguised by initials, I diagnosed my malaise as PDD, Project Deficit Disorder. Tasks and chores delivered none of the zest missing in my days. Then a bulb catalog showed up in the mail and offered a remedy. I promptly ordered 1,000 grape hyacinth bulbs. Alas, I was adding things rather than subtracting, but a project had taken shape in my mind. 100 bulbs per hour? Was that a reasonable goal? 1 hour a day? Well, it wasn't as easy as it sounded, but when it ended, I was back where I started, mulling the to-do list and feeling the hovering presence of PDD. I rethought my diagnosis. I'd gotten the initials right, I decided, but not the true source of this disorder. The deficit I suffered was passion, not projects. I needed a sense of purpose. I guess I'm not the retiring type. Not yet, at least. Or not ready for the kind of retirement I envisioned. The tasks I'd thought would bring a satisfying sense of completion did nothing at all to ignite the buzz of excitement that tells me I'm still alive. I wondered how to keep the fire from going cold as I advanced through this, a seventh decade. Demographic numbers suggest lots of folks like me out there. Retirees not ready for traditional retirement. Every single day this year, and for several years to come, 10,000 adults in the United States will cross the demarcation line of age 65. We're the age wave that psychologist Ken Dykewald identified in the title of his 1990 book. The wave that he forecast would change society and confront traditional views of aging and retirement. It appears he had it right. Look at Bill Cosby, for example. At 76, the comedian launched a show that proclaimed Bill Cosby far from finished. The title alone of Cosby's TV special offers a glimpse into the challenges of aging. At traditional retirement age, many of us are far from finished. Take actress June Squibb, nominated at age 84 for an Academy Award in recognition of her performance in the film Nebraska. And just this month, Oscar winner Estelle Parsons, 86, opens a Broadway play about a woman who barricades the door and arms herself with a Molotov cocktail when her adult children try to move her from her Brooklyn apartment. Granted, these are performers, different perhaps from the rest of us, but it's the entertainment media that fashioned and feeds our cultural infatuation with youth, and media that can change it. But don't forget there's also Pope Francis. Last year, Time magazine honored him as Person of the Year in recognition of the revitalization he aroused worldwide in his first 9 months as Pope. At 77, he's far from finished indeed. The same can be said for many of us now afloat on this retirement wave. We face decades of living for which we have few guidelines. We're reinventing ourselves with second and third careers to provide economic, social, or intellectual support for our extended golden years. We're navigating new roles in a culture so enamored of youth that we feel devalued with every wrinkle and arthritic joint. No wonder we suffer the symptoms of deficit disorder, be it passion, purpose, project, or position that's missing in our lives. Actually, I've come to think that PDD isn't exclusively age-related. It's a malady that shows up at transition points throughout our lives, an indicator that something needs to change. I suspect it was actually PDD, passion deficit disorder, that pushed me off the cliff 20-some years ago when I put down my reporter's notebook and left a position at the Register Guard. Friends asked me then if I was retiring. No, I insisted, not retiring, repositioning. It was time for new challenges. I'd spent 20 years as a newspaper journalist, 13 of them at this paper. As I hit 50, I felt the pinch of restlessness and grappled with a choice. Settle in for the remainder of my working life or make a career leap. The leap felt precipitous. Regular work had shaped my days and my identity since age 15 when I proudly served my first Dairy Queen cone. Adrift in the gap of unscheduled days, I grappled with self-doubt. Was this change a mistake? Had I jumped too soon? As I searched for direction, I hiked the reassuring path to the summit of Mount Pisgah almost daily. The workout gave structure to shapeless days and eventually led me into writing 2 books about walking, for fitness and for healing. I found my stride in a decade of opportunities to travel across the country teaching walking workshops at resorts and cancer survivor events. Then last year, with professional invitations waning and personal interests shifting, restlessness stirred again. Where's the passion, I wondered? What still lights the fire in my belly? The time seemed right for another leap. This time I'm leaping backwards in a way, returning to the Register Guard where I worked 1978 to 1992. The leap has me waking up at night, abuzz with questions and ideas for this new project, a column that explores the people and passions and ideas that keep us vital and involved with life as we face the challenges and opportunities of this, a new old age. That's it. That's where I'm starting.
Well, thank you so much. Will your columns be available to readers outside of your area?
The Register Guard newspaper does have a website, registerguard.com, and they do put up the papers daily. So people would have access, I think, simply by going to the Register Guard, getting the website, and searching by my name, Corchi, or by not the retiring type. Probably that would bring it up.
Okay,
too.
So we'll spell Corchi, K-O-R-T-G-E.
G-E.
There's a hyphen, right, between Register and Guard?
There's not on the website.
Oh, okay.
They put it all as one word.
I see. Okay, good. Well, I'm going to be very much looking forward to reading about these columns. Are they going to include interviews with people?
Yes, absolutely. I've already done interviews. I'm in my head of myself, but I've done an interview with a retired man who now lives in Eugene, who had a national consulting business with fitness centers setting up programs for seniors, worked a lot in the fitness industry in retirement communities also to set up programs that created physical activity as well as educational activities to keep a stimulating vitality. He, John Rood, is very, very emphatic that staying physically active is so important to sustaining a vital, vibrant, aging life. So John's interview is one that comes next, and I've talked with a former classmate of mine who went on to become a neuroscientist and has created a web program on brain plasticity called Brain HQ. That's brain, his program is Brain HQ, and it's one of these brain game things that you do to keep your memory active as we age. And so I interviewed Mike Merznick about what we can do to protect an active brain, and he talks about that in one of my future columns.
I can very much hear the enthusiasm in your voice and listening to you read your column. After discussing with us your history as a writer, I was really impressed with the way that you folded in the facts, which I'm sure are accurate. I'm sure you did your fact checking, but the facts about who we are now as an aging culture, how to look at that was very impressive and enfolded in your personal experience. And while we're talking about online, where we can read your columns, can you tell us your own website address?
My website is spiritedwalker.com. Spiritedwalker, one word, .com. That website, well, on the site I also have a blog, which you can access through the site. It's irregular, a couple of times a month.
Is it about walking?
It's not always about walking. I actually called the blog A Spirited Life instead of A Spirited Walker, although it's right on the same site, because I wanted it to access, I wanted to be able to expand beyond how-tos of walking or experiences of walking. There's a lot of focus on walking because there's a lot of walking in my life. I still find it to be essentially important in my own well-being and in my writing process. It's kind of how I refuel my brain. And I do it not necessarily by going out to think, but by going out trying not to think. Giving myself some clarity so I can think when I come back.
Excellent. Well, I know that Rollo May, whose work I admire and has written in The Courage to Create, that our aha moments come in our switch from hard work to relaxation of some kind. So I think remembering that we need to not always be just slicing at the problem, but allowing our bodies to do what they want to do really does help us. While we're talking about
journaling helps me also. I'll just say that because I do journal in the mornings, and lots of it is nonsense. It's not. Lots of it is like clearance work, just getting rid of gibberish and garbage in my life and my thoughts. But sometimes, I mean, sometimes the gibberish produces an idea that becomes a blog or integrated into a column. I find it a really helpful. Journaling and walking are my tools.
Excellent. Thank you for telling us about that. As writers, I think we can use all the tools we can recognize in ourselves, and we generally have them. We just need encouragement to see them as tools and as important to the writing life. Thank you so much for talking with us today. Good luck with the column.
Thank you for this interview.
Thank you.
In Conversation is produced by Sheila Bender and edited by Charlie Fleischman. Production coordinator is Mike Schlexer. Announcer is Kurt Vanderslice.